Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano coming up on Inside Coverage. What's next in New York with Brian Daboll out? And is Bill Belichick the answer? How did the Patriots turn it around so quickly? And are they the Super Bowl favorite of the AFC? Drury Epstein's writing about Drake May and New England and why Frank Schwab hates the Steelers. I'm kidding. He doesn't. Drury, Frank, and yours truly. Maybe I do. Next on Inside Coverage. There is a reason that they call the National Football League the greatest reality show on television, because you're never going to get. Welcome to a Monday edition of Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. I hope if you are on an airplane going anywhere that you got there safely. Maybe you even got there on time. Maybe you even did so with a smile on your face and you had good Wi-Fi and you were able to watch football while you were traveling. I'm actually one of those people. Hi. My name is Andrew Siciliano. We thank you for being here today on a weekend in which, oh, the Jaguars blew a huge lead and the Giants blew a huge lead and Aaron Rodgers looked old and Jonathan Taylor looked like the MVP yet again as we had a game in Germany and Daniel Jones had a bloody lip and the Saints stunned the world and got a win and the Bills fell apart and looked awful. And the Dolphins got a win and then played with the laundry carts in the locker room. This was stuff that you couldn't script, pretty much, when last we did a show on Thursday, our Week 10 preview show. So now we're here, as we are every Monday, to tell you, of course, we knew that was going to happen. We knew it the whole time. Drury knew it. Frank knew it. We all knew it because this stuff is so predictable, right, Drury?
Yeah, we know everything that is going to happen in the NFL because there are just no surprises in the script.
No, there's none. But I think we did know, Frank, that Brian Daboll was going to get fired. And I might have even told you what happened today. I think we were on that one.
Yeah, might have been obvious that how did he survive or how did Mike McDaniel survive longer than him? That is the upset of the week, I guess. Mike McDaniel pulling off that win against the Bills buys him more time. And yes, Brian Daboll being fired, not really a surprise. It's been inevitable since the end of last season, really.
And let's make something clear. I'm not celebrating the Brian Daboll got fired. That is the story today on a Monday. The Giants became only the second team to blow in the Super Bowl era. Here it is. The second team of the Super Bowl era to blow 2 10-point leads in the final 4 minutes of a game in the same season. And they did it again. They lost to the Bears when Jackson Dart got hurt again, went to the locker room, concussion protocol again. And Russell Wilson became, well, the guy that we saw the first month of the season, and Caleb turned into the guy that we saw winning the Heisman Trophy at USC, and the Bears rallied. And today, Brian Daboll is fired. Brian Callahan was the first one. Brian Daboll is the second one. Mike Kafka, not Kafka. I've been accused of looking like Kafka. Go ahead and Google it. Mike Kafka, the offensive coordinator and a man who was coaching at the Senior Bowl as a head coach this past January and February, is going to take over now as the interim head coach. He's been the guy in Jackson Dart's head, and he's the guy now that tries to steer this thing back into the port. Let's try to break down what broke down for Brian Daboll. Back in 2022, and this really is an example of how things change so quickly in this league. Back in 2022, Brian Daboll was the coach of the year in the National Football League. I remember vividly after NFL honors in Phoenix at the Super Bowl, hanging in the hotel bar with Brian Daboll, having a cocktail and telling stories and laughing and joking, and the future was so bright. They were 9-7-1. They, with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, had gone to Minnesota and won a road playoff game against Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings. It was the first playoff win for that franchise in 11 years. And then 3 years later, he's gone. Because since then, they've gone 6-11, 3-14, and then this year, they are 2-8. That is how quickly it can change in the NFL, even when you have figured out who your next franchise quarterback is. And it seems that the Giants have figured that out. it does look like they have that guy in Jackson Dart. They traded up into the bottom half of the first round to get him, and it looks like they got it right. But the problem is, Jory, is that this had been coming for a while and that Brian Daboll can't keep Jackson Dart healthy. Now, it's not the only reason he got fired, but this is the fourth time, if you go back to the preseason, that Jackson Dart had to go into the locker room or go into the blue tent and get checked for a head injury. This is the second time he is in concussion protocol. He did not start until week four, and he has more designed runs than any other quarterback in the NFL, and he missed the first 3 weeks of the season. He had five more of them yesterday. Everyone knew this was coming. It looked as if, I talked about it with Eli Manning last week, they're going to get this kid killed, and he leaves again. And my gut tells me that had to be the final straw.
Absolutely. I think that one of the things Brian Daboll most loved about Jackson Dart was that fire, was that swagger, was that willingness to be tough and physical and just run. And that's something that Cam Scadaboo showed us, and that's something that Jackson Dart showed us. And Brian Daboll's energy really matched theirs in a way his energy did not match that of Daniel Jones. The problem is, it was not sustainable. It is not sustainable. And I hope the head coach of next year's New York Giants knows it will not be sustainable. I think back to what the Washington Commanders learned about Jaden Daniels last year, and I recognize I'm saying this when Jaden has been injured recently, but in the first game of Jaden Daniels' career, he carried 16 times for 88 yards, two touchdowns, in addition to his passing game. It was great. He was super dual threat, all of that, or maybe less of the passing threat at that time. But over the course of the year, Jaden told me he learned, I can't take off like that. I have to hang in the pocket a little bit more. And I remember even talking to Mac Brown recently for a Drake Mace story. He told Drake, yeah, if the game's on the line, go do it. But if you're always taking off, it's a little bit selfish because we need you for more than that. And so I recognize Jackson Dart is electric running, but as we saw in Chicago, it is not a sustainable model. Now, this isn't to say Brian Daboll got Jackson Dart hurt, but I do think one of the head coach's jobs is to protect a player from themselves, whether that's taking them out of the game, which ultimately Brian Daboll did play a part in yesterday, or putting them in the game. And so I think when we look at what's needed, I think that you can say that they match energy, head coach and quarterback, but you might actually be looking for more of a complementary energy to rein in Jackson Dart for his second year in the league.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the moment where I thought, okay, this thing is sour and it needs to end pretty quickly. That was when Brian Daboll was poking his head into the medical tent and then screaming at a team doctor on the sideline, where's my quarterback? Get him out here. Brian, he's being checked for a concussion. That was the moment when you realized, yeah, self-preservation is the number one priority for Brian Daboll, which I get. It's probably why he shouldn't have come back this year. I mean, at the end of last year, John Mara came out and he said basically, yeah, I know this isn't going to be popular, but we feel we need to do it. But I'm running out of patience, so we're going to have to. It was such a lukewarm endorsement of Brian Daboll, Joe Shane, by the way, who survived all this, that it's just like, why didn't you just pull the plug then? Everybody knew Daboll needed to do the impossible this year to get himself off the hot seat. It wasn't really going to happen. And then you get this prized rookie, Jackson Dart, who looks awesome. But the one thing he cannot do that's just not in his game right now is protect himself. He is just, he plays this the position like a linebacker, they'll use a cliche, and he just has nothing in himself to say, I'm going to slide. And Brian Daboll is probably like, that's okay with me, kid. I need to win games to keep my job. And I'm sorry to be so blunt about it, but that just seems how it is. Like, it just seemed to be a very selfish approach from Brian Daboll. And I go back to him screaming at the team doctor on the sideline. That was a moment for me. I was like, this is disgusting. This is absolutely awful that we're seeing this happen right now in a league that has talked so much about concussions at a team that really needs to protect its rookie. Brian Daboll is doing the opposite. So I think this was absolutely, it's a lot. It's wins and losses. 2-8 is why he got fired. But I think the Giants looked at this and said, yeah, it's not in his best interest to keep Jackson Dart healthy. And that needs to be our number one priority. Hopefully the next coach, like you said, Joy, that has to be part of the game plan going forward is, all right, Jackson, we know you got this fire, this energy. You need to channel it a little bit. We're going to have a sliding class, okay? We're going to teach you how to slide this offseason because he needs to do that first and foremost.
11-33 since that coach of the year in a playoff season back in 2022. Let's talk about the Joe Shane thing because you mentioned it there, Frank. Joe Shane in the Giants press release announcing, and they didn't say we've mutually parted ways. They say that Brian Daboll has been relieved of his duties as head coach. They say that Joe Shane, the GM, will stay on and lead the search for a new head coach. I think if you do a redraft, I'm not a big fan of the redraft pieces, but we all do them. If you do a redraft, we're only halfway through the season. There are a lot of teams right now, the Steelers, maybe even the Browns, that would have taken Jackson Dart. Or maybe they wouldn't have, but it is fun to play the game. Hey, where would this team be if they had taken Jackson Dart? Seems like the Giants got it right, and Joe Shane deserves the credit for that. But now Joe Shane is part of the deal. So, Jory, A, what do you think is Shane staying on? And B, all that said, is this an attractive job?
I think we saw with Tom Telesco getting the Raiders job immediately after losing the Chargers job that if you find a quarterback but can't get the rest of your roster right, you're way more likely to keep your job and get your next job than if you're able to get the entire rest of the roster but not a quarterback. Now, I do think it's worth asking, did Joe Shane get the Giants a team that will both be available and able, or did he get them a team that has a really high upside but is going to constantly have these injuries because these injuries aren't flukes so much as the design and the style of how they play? So I do think we have to ask that. I also am a little bit interested in the phrasing of the statement if we really want to parse words, because I had someone from a team who sent me Adam Schefter's tweet that said, Joe Shane will remain on as the general manager. And this is semantics, but if you actually look on at the statement, it's not will remain, it's Joe Shane remains in his position as general manager and will lead the search for a new head coach. I'm not that confident that Joe Shane is guaranteed 2026 season. I think he's here for the next few months. I think he is going to start on that head coach search. But I think the same way we've seen in other teams, that head coach might have a say in the general manager. And so I do think there are question marks about how safe that is. It might be a reflection of what happens the next few months or few weeks, I should say, until that happens. Now, we have seen that when a general manager or a head coach really endears themselves to ownership and is kind of functioning as basically a proxy for ownership, they're more likely to stay on. And I would put Joe Shane in that category, but I still think there are questions. And to answer your last question about how attractive this job is, it's the most attractive opening so far. And I recognize it's only two, but in my mind, I feel like Miami is heading toward that direction. It would not be surprising if there are openings in Cleveland. And I think if you take Cleveland, Miami, Tennessee, and New York Giants, if all four of them have openings, I think New York, in terms of the stability of the ownership, the location, the talent that's already there in their young core, and particularly what they've got on the defensive line and in their skill players, and then you take the fact that they seem to have a quarterback, that is far and away the most attractive job that is looking like it is open or will be.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe, I cut you off. There's the delay on this thing. That's all on me. Throw in Arizona, maybe potentially as well. There's always going to be a surprise. There's a surprise every year. Because you mentioned the press release, let me get to it. And here's the exact wording from the Giants. Joe Shane, as you said, Jory, Joe Shane remains in his position as general manager and will lead the search for a new head coach. And then there's a quote from John Mara. We feel like Joe has assembled a good young nucleus of talent, and we look forward to its development. Frank, what do you think?
It's very interesting because, Jory, I agree with you that this is probably the most attractive opening. We'll see which openings come about. But of the ones we anticipate or are already open, yeah, the Giants, because of the young talent, because it's in New York, because the Giants still have this reputation as being a decent franchise, although they've been, kind of been a poverty franchise for like 13 years now. But there are a lot of things in place. But does that opening get less attractive if Joe Shane stays on? Because I think a good head coaching candidate would say, the Bears have tried this, the Titans have tried this, they're dysfunctional franchises in many ways. If you come in with a lame duck GM, that guy's probably going to change in a year anyway. Unless this thing turns totally around 2026, Joe Shane's next. And you kind of like that. That's kind of the model right now, is you come in with a GM, you handpick, or the GM handpicks you, and you come in together. And that's kind of the way to do things. Joe Shane serving as the guy who's kind of overlooking the head coaching search for now. You're right, Jory. The wording of that was very interesting. If he is the GM going forward for the 2026 season, I think there's some candidates out there would be like, oh, this is very Titans-ish, right? Do I want to get involved with this, with a franchise again that, since they won a Super Bowl at the end of the 2021 season or 2011 season, has gone to the playoffs twice and won once? They're on pace to have their 10th double-digit loss season in the last 12. Like, this is a bad franchise. And you add on, okay, I'm not coming in with my own GM. I'm coming in with a GM who is already on very thin ice here. And it's not even about whether Joe Shade has done a good job or a bad job at this point. I think he's done some good things. His last two drafts have been excellent. Of course, the Saquon Barkley thing happened. Even probably worse than that was Xavier McKinney leaving for nothing, because Saquon Barkley is never going to work in New York. We saw that over and over. But I think Joe Shane has done some good things, done some not so good things. But it's more like, is this helping you as a franchise to keep Joe Shane on? I don't know that the answer to that is yes, to be honest. The package deal is kind of what works in the NFL now, and the Giants are going against that. And I'm not sure that that's their best course of action.
All right, I'm gonna run down the list of names. This is Joe Shane's last two drafts. So this year, Abdul Carter, sacks aren't there, the pressures are, if that's important to you, and it should be. Carter, Jackson Dart, Darius Alexander, the Toledo defensive lineman, Cam Scadaboo, Marcus Bowe, the O lineman, Thomas Fedona, and Corey Black. Those are seventh round picks. And then last year, Malik Nabers, the two DBs, Tyler Newbin, Andrew Phillips, Theo Johnson, Tyrone Tracy. I would argue that the DBs can play, that Nabers, obviously, we know what he could do. Theo Johnson's coming into his own this year now that he's got a quarterback. Tyrone Tracy, we saw, can run when healthy, and with him and Scadaboo in the backfield, that's a pretty decent combo. But you're right. You need to marry the coach and the GM generally. You don't need to, but generally, that's how it works, and it works best. Now, let's play make-believe here. We've already heard the names like Clint Kubiak. We've heard Lane Kiffin. I mean, we're just making stuff up on Twitter here. Put Lane Kiffin and Jackson Dart back together. I've also, all right, you guys are going to laugh. I am just going to do this. Maybe I'm just doing this for the social clip, but I'm going to do it. Okay?
If you don't, I will. I think I already got
okay.
it.
Okay.
There it is.
Jory Bill Belichick.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, I was talking to our colleague Charles Robinson today, and I'm like, 2 weeks ago, I had a conversation with someone, and I'm like, is Bill Belichick going to be considered in this NFL cycle? And they said, and again, at that time, it didn't seem clear whether the Giants would open it up. And they said, if the Giants open up their job, that's where I would expect Bill Belichick to get interest. And then this person told me something really interesting, which is that head coaches from the NFL ranks, so whether that's a coordinator, position coach, et cetera, like, you can't go get them right now. You can't go talk to them right now. That would be considered tampering. Howie Roseman would probably fine you 14 draft picks. And oh, by the way, there is a specific cycle for how this works. But if a coach is in the college ranks, like Bill Belichick is, the Giants could call him today and they would not be violating NFL policy. And so I think that when you consider this, there's actually some belief around the NFL that because there's a little bit shorter of a pipeline at the top, not really a pipeline, but like a top end of the available and attractive candidates for head coaches within the NFL ranks, that we will see multiple college coaches get head coaching jobs in the NFL last year, at least be seriously considered, that this will become a little more common. But I do think that the Giants will at least put in the call to Bill Belichick, and you've got to ask whether he would be interesting. The other name, and then I want to hear what you think about Bill Belichick, Frank, to me is, if Joe Shane's sticking around, you know that Joe Shane came from Buffalo. He's got his eye on Buffalo, and he's well aware of what's happening in Buffalo. I would love to see what Joe Brady, the Buffalo offensive coordinator, could do with Jackson Dart. And I recognize that he's not coming off a banner week. And he even said after the Miami Dolphins lost on Monday, he said, this is on me and I take this solely on me. But he is the most attractive coaching option for a head coach to a lot of people in the NFL. And so to me, I'm curious Bill Belichick and I'm curious Joe Brady. Frank, what do you think?
All right, hold on. Frank, stay there.
Andrew can't wait here.
Let me say this. About an hour ago, before we sat down, before Joe Brady went to the podium in Buffalo, Sean McDermott was asked point blank, are you going to keep him on as OC? Are you going to make a change in play caller? And he said, no, he's my OC. And then he was asked, because of Brian Daboll's history here, used to be your OC, would you bring Brian Daboll back to work with Josh Allen? And he said, right now, I'm not going to do that. It's not even under consideration. So, like, all these ties between these two franchises, I don't That's know, crazy. Frank.
Let's talk Belichick, because that'll be the elephant in the room until somebody else gets hired. We all know the ties. Belichick loves that organization. He was their defensive coordinator there, did great, great work in the Super Bowl years. Doesn't probably get enough credit for that. And look, I have ultimate respect for Bill Belichick. I think he has a very clear argument to be the best coach in NFL history. but what has he done lately? Like, you're not talking about hiring Bill Belichick in the middle of his prime. You're talking about Bill Belichick is going to be 74 years old next year. We've seen this is not working with Pete Carroll with the Raiders, right? Now you're like, what was the point in hiring Pete Carroll? This was a rebuilding team that, what, hired the oldest coach in NFL history. I think the Giants would be making the same mistake. And that's as somebody who really, truly does respect Bill Belichick. He hasn't had a great season since, what are we talking about, 2019 when Brady left? Mm-hmm. It's been a while. And the UNC thing has been pretty bad. Like, it's turning around slightly, but it's still not a success. So why would the Giants, who are nowhere close to competing with the Eagles, they might not even have a better footing right now than the Commanders or the Cowboys in the division. Okay, they're not a year or two away from being NFC East champions. Why would the Eagles consider, or why would the Giants consider Bill Belichick? He's, again, I don't want to be ageist here. He's 74 years old. You're not coaching that
You're
much longer.
You're being ageist, Frank.
I am being ageist, actually. I shouldn't have even said anything. I'll be ageist. Why would you hire a 74-year-old head coach when you are clearly a rebuilding team? It makes no sense. It just, as much as there's some jobs Bill Belichick would fit. If you somehow, some way had this team come open where you're like, we could win a Super Bowl next year with the right coach. Cool, go do that. He's a 1 year, 2 year guy, maybe. He ain't a guy for the rebuilding Giants. This is all nostalgia. This is all stuff that he did in the 1990 season to shut down Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas. Well, that was a long freaking time ago, okay? Like, this is, it doesn't make any sense to me other than connecting dots, because it just would, it would be a bad hire. As great as Bill Belichick is, and he's undeniably great, it makes no sense for the New York Giants in 2026.
Let me offer this too. I think Bill Belichick can still coach. Obviously, the record speaks for itself, and this year has been a bit of a mess. But considering everything going on off the field, I'll phrase it that way, with Bill Belichick, do you, if you're the Giants, want that circus with the back pages right now in New York? This isn't the same Belichick you would have hired 4 years ago. I mean, maybe he's still got the same football mind. He's still Bill Belichick. But everything that now comes with it, baggage may not be the right way to say it or phrase it or couch it. But is that something that John Mara would want for the back page of the New York Post? Do we want his significant other being followed around Midtown Manhattan? Do we want her sending notes to columnists? Like, do we want that? I don't see that at all.
I don't know that John Mara would be so concerned reputationally, and I could be wrong on that, but I am curious, has Bill Belichick's ability to garner respect from players been impacted by it? That's where I think the question is, because I remember I went to New England, I guess it would have been Bill Belichick's last game coaching for the Patriots, and then I was at their locker room clean out the next day. So this is two seasons ago. That Sunday I was there for the game, and Monday the next day. And I was asking some of the players about Bill Belichick, because obviously externally, we were definitely heading in the direction of a dismissal or a parting of ways between the Patriots and Bill Belichick. And it was clear that both from a GM standpoint and in some ways from a coaching decision standpoint, but especially in terms of the personnel element, Bill Belichick was not at his height. And the locker room was way more into him than I was expecting. Like, and they actually were saying, I didn't know if they would be a little concerned about him. Not concerned, but intimidated. I mean, as we've talked about time and time again, this generation of players isn't really used to the historical Bill Belichick style, and they really weren't. They seemed to find him endearing, and that was surprising to me. So I am curious, like, maybe what we think would be the perception and reception of him by a locker room is not actually what it would be.
Frank, final thought, 30 seconds, go.
I think the Giants need to find a young, good offensive mind, like the Bears did with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, to work with Jackson Dart. And that ain't Bill Belichick in the year 2026. Great coach, awesome history, but go find that dude who's going to be your head coach for the next 10, 15 years, hopefully. Not. And I don't trust the Giants to get this right. Their last four head coach hires are Ben McAdoo, Pat Shurmur, Joe Judge, and Brian Daboll. Okay, like, do I trust the Giants to do the right thing here? No, I do not.
I mean, they got it right with Daboll for a year.
That was a lucky year. That was such a lucky year. They were so lucky.
Whatever.
They were
all right. Coming up next, I'll do the 30 for 30, boys. What if I told you that Joe Burrow might be back in 3 weeks? No, really. I mean it. the state of the AFC North, which starts in the state of Ohio, at least today, coming up next on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage, everybody. Let's talk about the AFC North, because the AFC North is so exciting. And by the way, this is not a Browns helmet over my shoulder. It is a Jim Brown helmet. If you're watching, and we thank you for watching, this is a Syracuse helmet. It's not a Browns helmet. All right. I feel like I need to say that once a week. Anyway, AFC North looks like this. Steelers, not good. They've lost 3 out of 4. They went to LA and their offense was absolutely awful. I mean, just awful. They lose to the Chargers. They did not convert a third down until they were down 22 in the fourth quarter. That tells the whole story. The Ravens, what do you know? Vegas might have been right. They've won 3 in a row. They start slowly. They rally from down 10-3, and they win in Minnesota 4 consecutive games, holding the other team under 20. We can get back to those two in a second. The Ravens are down a game behind the Steelers in the AFC North. And then you have the Bengals. They're out of it. They're 3-6. It's over. Except maybe it isn't. Joe Burrow, supposed to be out for the year. Maybe he'd be back in late December. But only if the Bengals have a shot. Well, I'm telling you, there's a chance. They are 3-6. They're coming off a bye. And the Bengals open the window today, the 21-day practice window for Joe Burrow. As he said today when he sat down at the podium, I played some football today. In typical Joe Burrow, no big deal, no energy, but we still love him on the podium kind of thing. And when asked near the end of his presser, how significant would it be if you're back week 13 at Baltimore? He paused and he paused and he paused and he went, very. And then the follow-up was, Joe, is that where you're targeting? Pause, pause, pause. We'll see. It sure sounds like, guys, that Joe Burrow is going to play week 13 against the Ravens. I'm not getting too far ahead of ourselves. It was just one day. They're testing out shoes. He doesn't know how the toe is going to respond. But they opened the window. And they're not going to open the window unless they think this is probably going to happen. Jory, this is not a storyline that I don't think any of us saw coming.
Joe Burrow definitely hoped that we would see this storyline coming. And I think when I look at this and I say, well, who do the Bengals need to beat to stay competitive for Joe Burrow's return? And the first one on that list, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, I trust the Bengals to beat the Steelers right now. I'm not sure that Aaron Rodgers' offense from Sunday night against the Chargers is going to be able to do a whole lot even against the Bengals defense. And that Bengals offense has been good even without Joe Burrow. It's been really successful at Joe Flacco. I'm less optimistic that they will be the Patriots, though. And then that kind of gets into, well, how many games can you keep losing before the Ravens are pulling away in the division? You're not really in contention for a wild card, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I actually think that he should probably wait more towards the second game against the Ravens, which would be 2 weeks later on December 14th, and that would be a little more, or the Bills December 7th. But I don't know. I think when you look at Joe Burrow's injury history, you do have to ask yourself, is rushing back to probably not make the playoffs actually worth it? And that's not a decision that's up to me. And I'm not saying that I have a history of being patient with my own injuries, but I think that if I am the Bengals and I'm trying to keep Joe Burrow for the next 10, 15 years, I would ask that question. Frank, would you want Joe Burrow back as soon as possible?
I think most people looked at this as really good news today. By the way, real quick, Andrew, when you said Vegas was right about the Ravens, didn't realize I changed my first name to Vegas because I've been telling you the Ravens are going to win this division, but that's okay.
Well,
that's
dude,
okay.
Should I'll we change my name
to
Vegas,
you spend
Frank?
Dabbling, Frank.
That's true. I'll save my victory laps for later and talk actually
Vegas,
about
Frank.
Joe Burrow. Most people
Fremont
view this as
Street
good news.
Frank.
Fremont Street Frank. I actually like that. I looked at this as bad news because I just don't want to see Joe Burrow come back too early and re-injure himself and set himself back. And I do worry about the Bengals. Look, the Bengals, the Bengals are in. They're not in this thing. That defense stinks. It's so bad. Joe Burrow doesn't fix that. Their offensive line, I don't think is set up well enough to protect him the way he should be protected. It'd be a great story. I give him so much credit for his toughness. And he's a great, great player, Hall of Fame path, all that kind of stuff. I worry he's going to come back too quick and make it worse. I really do. I don't want to see anything bad happen to Joe Burrow. And I don't know that the Bengals have the infrastructure really to keep keep him from getting injured again. I mean, that was the story after he got injured was, are the Bengals failing Joe Burrow? And in many ways, yes, the answer is yes. So I don't want to see him come back too soon. But man, what theater would it be if they can win their next two games and they're back in the race? The AFC North is not, you know, slipping away from anybody at this point. If they have Joe Burrow come back against the Ravens, it would be an awesome story. I appreciate that part of it. I'm just worried. I be very honest. I'm worried Joe Burrow is going to rush this thing back. The Bengals are going to rush him back because, hey, maybe seats are getting hot around there too. Let's be honest. They miss a playoff.
I'm sure
again
they are.
In the Joe Burrow's prime, like they want to, they're in self-preservation mode a little bit here too. So are they looking out for the best of Joe Burrow? I don't know. I just hope everything goes well with Joe Burrow. That's it. That's the end of the story. I don't care if the Bengals make the playoffs, don't make the playoffs, whatever. I just want to see Joe Burrow not get re-injured here before the end of the season.
Okay, so let's make something clear. I don't want to rush him back either. It was great to have him back on the podium. He was charming today. He was talking about playing the piano, and he's not re-injuring the toe on the pedals on the piano. He's had a lot of time with the piano. He's been frustrated. He's been depressed. He's learning something from Joe Flacco. They have very similar low-key personalities. He didn't miss meeting you guys, meeting the media. Like he was great. It was great to see him back. But here's how
they are back in this. Was that great that he didn't miss us?
Yeah, I know. That was near the end of the presser. It was funny, but he said it in his own little sly, you know, low-key, subtle way. They've already beaten the Steelers, okay? Now, they play the Steelers again this week. The game is in Pittsburgh. You should also know that Joe Flacco, and they're coming off a bye, didn't practice today. That's why they had a Monday practice, because they're coming off a bye. So his status is very much up in the air. Zach Taylor said that Trey Hendrickson is already doubtful this week. It might be Jake Browning this week. But if, let's play the if game, if the Bengals can beat the Steelers this week, they get to 4-6, they have a sweep of the Steelers, Pittsburgh would fall to 5-5, so they're right behind them. I mean, who cares what the Ravens do at that point? You're in it. You're in it. Now, as you mentioned, Frank, then the week after that,
Opium.
You get New England.
Opium.
Mm-hmm. You get New England. I'm not a Bengals fan. My little nephew is. That's another issue. I don't know how and why that happened, but he is. I'm telling you, Jake Browning magic beat the Steelers. If that happens this week, Jory, they are in it.
How can we say who cares what happens to the Ravens? Of course we do. The Ravens are about to play the Browns and the Jets.
Yes.
Do you
no,
not think they're going to be 7-5 after
is,
that? That matters.
I don't. It's Monday. I can't do the, well, I assume the Ravens are going to win. I can't do that, okay? I'm not going to say
knows
that again.
The NFL
I can't focus
anymore
on that.
Who knows,
I've still wrapped my head
five,
around the Jets
say.
Game
six and
from
five,
yesterday.
My bad.
I'm not going to go there. My point is, if you take the Ravens out of it, just look at the Bengals. If they win, they're a game back of the Steelers with a sweep. That's all I got to know.
This is the hopium I talked about. All NFL teams do this. We're like, well, if we just beat them and then we somehow beat the Patriots and then Joe Burrow comes back and we're going to beat the Ravens, we're right back. Oh, my goodness. No, the Bengals
Frank,
defense
why we all have jobs.
Is an,
why NFLShop.com makes money.
Exactly. The Bengals defense is a debacle. And unless Joe Burrow is going to play rush end, I don't think that's going to get any better. So, but I get it. Like, that's how NFL teams think. And that's why I worry
Andrew,
for Joe
do
Burrow.
Do you think the Ravens are not going to beat the Browns this coming week?
I think the Ravens are a considerable favorite against the Browns. What I was saying is, if you were to take that game out of the equation, forget about it. You could only worry about yourself. And this week, you're playing the team that is currently in first place, right? I mean, that's how Zach Taylor's talking about it with his team, you'd have to assume. You're playing the team that's currently in first, and if you win this game, you're a game back with a sweep in hand. That's all they got to worry about. I'm not saying the Ravens won't factor in the end. They clearly will, but it's not of significance this week. You're playing a Steelers team that's coming back from L.A., right? Overnight flight, assuming they got in with air traffic control, after getting their pants pulled down by the Chargers, and they look bad. Oof. I mean, like I said, they didn't convert
bad.
A third
That's
down
a
until
team.
They were down 22 in the fourth quarter. Aaron Rodgers looked his age. Like, what's he doing taking a safety there, backpedaling into the end zone? You don't like the Steelers looked as mortal as they have been. Do we agree on that, Jory, Sunday night?
Oh, yeah.
I would say that, yeah.
Okay. Frank?
Oh, yeah, the Steelers are awful. They're a bad football team. The Ravens are going to have this thing clinched by mid-December. Like, they're bad. Like,
their offense
Aaron Rodgers
definitely
passer
looked
rating
as bad as it's looked. Their defense might have looked worse against the Packers.
Yes. The before one garbage time drive at the end, Aaron Rodgers' rating was 19.5. His career low was 34. His great long career. He had the worst game of his career in many ways on Sunday. I don't think this boat is turning back around. Like it's sinking. It ain't good for the Steelers. And that's why I think the Ravens run away with this thing. They're going to win their next five games. Look at their schedule. They're hitting a soft spot at the schedule at the right time.
One game.
But
at
yes,
a time,
for the Bengals, when it comes to the Bengals, they're looking at this division like, well, if this happens and that happens, we're still in this thing because Pittsburgh's no good and the Ravens are still losing record.
One week
they're
at
gonna
a time.
They're going to talk themselves into this thing. They're going to talk them into
the one week season. So the Steelers' fewest points in a game since a week 17 last year when they lost to the Chiefs on Christmas. Steelers' offense, 221 yards, 11 first downs.
And like 70 of that came on that
drives.
Last drive. Yeah. That was bad. So bad. They're a bad football team.
The Ravens are one game back. They still have five division games to go. They are 1-0 in the division. That was a week two win over the Browns. They forced three turnovers, eight forced in their last four games. It's a week-by-week season. That is all I'm saying. I mean, the Steelers had a 2.5 game lead after week six. A month later, it's a one game lead, and no one thinks they are going to win the division. And Mike Tomlin, when pressed on the podium afterwards, what'd you think of Aaron Rodgers' performance? What do you think? Gave us one of those. What do you think?
He was salty last night. I watched that. He was salty. Mike Tomlin and Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was asked about if they made any differences schematically, and he was just like, schematically? Yeah.
They're in trouble. A lot of trouble. Tomlin,
I think that it was, how would you,
I
transcribe, how would you assess Aaron's performance tonight? How would you? I mean, it was... And then he said next. He did that multiple times. He was done with the questions.
By the way, see that smiling face right there? Ladd McConkey will join the show coming up tomorrow. Inside coverage.
Ladd might be the youngest looking player in the NFL, by the way. Ladd, that looks like a high school sophomore like yearbook photo. Like he is a young dude, man. He's a great player. Great player.
You know what I love too about Frank? Frank. I'm going to preface this by this is not a shot. It's actually why I love you. Okay. Is that I could just say, Frank, but this team's not any good. And you're just going to go, no, they're awful. They're awful. It's the worst game ever. They're awful. They're horrible. The Steelers are horrible. Aaron Rodgers is horrible.
But they are. In that case, it's right. They're awful. They're a bad football team right now. Bad, bad. They're bad, Andrew. They're bad.
They're bad. Yeah. Know that they're bad. Go ahead.
I do get concerned that Joe Burrow will come back against the Ravens. The Bengals are capable of beating the Ravens, but I don't think they're capable of winning the division. And so is that then worth it? Is it worth it to get a little bit of your rhythm back for next year? Maybe. Some people would say it is. If you're Zach Taylor and your job's on the line, then you might say it is. But if I'm running that team for the next 2, 3, 5 years, I'm just not convinced.
And I'm 100% with you. I don't think the Bengals have, obviously, I know the Bengals do not have a defense capable of getting them, well, doing anything in January. Right now, they can't do anything in November. Yes, we know how bad their defense is. But I truly, and you guys know this from being in buildings, spending your whole career in buildings, in any of the 32, is that these are one-week seasons. And I'm just saying if the Bengals can win this, it changes all the math. Because then how, if you're Zach Taylor, do you look at your locker room or you look at Joe Burrow and you go, wait a minute, we're here. It is attainable and we're not going to put him in. Let's say Flacco's shoulder is still jacked. We're going to go with Jake Browning over Joe Burrow. But you have to. And this is always such a big factor when it comes to quarterback changes. And fans don't always get it. Right? With any quarterback change, old or young, it's, what am I telling the other guys in our locker room, the veterans who are busting their tails, who may only have a couple of weeks left in their career, or a year or 2 years left in their career, or maybe they finally made it and this is their only shot, right? They worked their way up from the practice squad and they know this might be their only year of a real paycheck. Yeah, you know what? we're not going to do our best to try to win this week. And I think Zach Taylor may have to have that conversation if the Bengals can beat the Steelers. But there are a lot of ifs. All right. Coming up. If the Dolphins beat the Bills. Well, they did. Now what in Buffalo? Also coming up, are the Patriots the best team in the American Football Conference? And if not, who cares? Are they a Super Bowl team? That's all that matters. Jory's writing about the Patriots. They won. I don't want to say stunning win because I predicted it, but they beat the Bucs. That's coming up on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo, everybody. Andrew Siciliano, Jory Epstein, and Frank Schwab. If the playoffs were to start today, I use that phrase a lot again, figured out.
You love that.
The road to the Super Bowl in the American Football Conference would run through Indianapolis. Jonathan Taylor, even though Frank says running back should be forbidden from winning the MVP.
They are forbidden. You got me all wrong. I want running backs to win MVP. I want them to.
Now, Frank, I'm just putting words in your mouth to tick you off is what I'm doing. Jonathan Taylor put together another amazing day. The 80-something yard touchdown run in the second half, and then he had the touchdown in overtime. And then Chris Ballard gave him a kiss on the cheek live on television while he was being interviewed by the great Stacey Dales after the game in Berlin. So the Colts are 8-2. The Broncos with an absolutely putrid offensive performance in a game for which you should all get a refund if you spent 3 hours on your couch this past Thursday. The Broncos found a way to beat the Raiders. They're the 2 seed. And then there are, read about them, Jory Epstein today on Yahoo, the New England Patriots at 8-2. Jory, is a great story about not only Drake May, but about Kyle Williams, about Travion Henderson, about all the young pieces with, other than Drake May, nothing to show really from last year's draft class, but the young pieces where they have built a core. They have, in all likelihood, the coach of the year, although Shane Steichen would like a word, and they have turned this thing around so quickly.
Absolutely. Initially, when I was looking at this game, I was curious how Drake May was going to play because the Patriots only have so many games against teams with like strong winning records this year, a couple of games against the Bills, a game against the Buccaneers. And so if you are in the MVP conversation, the Coach of the Year conversation, how you perform in those games where more is on the line and more is required to win is really important. And then as the game went on, I'm like, well, Drake played well. He definitely made some incredible plays. But he also had by far his lowest completion percentage of the season. It was about 20% lower than what he had been averaging throughout the season. And so I'm like, that's not really the story. Well, maybe it's the rookies. Maybe it's Kyle Williams, Travion Henderson. I mean, your rookie skill players had not just 3 touchdowns, but 3 touchdowns of 50-plus yards each. They were explosive. I mean, you see Travion Henderson, and all of a sudden, it's like he seems to be in the middle of this group of defenders. They're making contact, and then he goes around and has that 50-plus yard touchdown going around the left end. And then I started to look, and I'm like, well, this actually isn't just the rookies, because one, Drake did contribute, and two, there were some other guys. So I actually went through and counted on offense and defense how many players have joined the Patriots after Bill Belichick's time. Because again, we're less than 2 years removed from Bill Belichick and the Patriots parting ways. A big reason they parted ways because they felt from a personnel standpoint, he wanted the power and he was no longer making sound personnel decisions. And when I looked at it, 9 of 11 offensive starters and 8 of 11 defensive starters arrived in New England after Bill Belichick in the last year and a half, whether that was free agency one of the last 2 years or the draft one of the two last years. I mean, they've really overhauled this roster, and those 17 of 22 didn't even include Kyle Williams, who had 1 catch on 2 targets. But it was a 55-yard touchdown. And so I think you have to recognize that, yes, Mike Vrabel has done a great job with the culture. And yes, they've hit on a quarterback, which is huge. But when Mike Vrabel and the Patriots kept saying yesterday, it's players, not plays, which they said most about what Drake had done with Stephon Diggs on the toe-tapping touchdown as time expired in the first half, you have to recognize that whether it's the draft picks or whether it's bringing in guys like Stephon Diggs and Garrett Bradbury and Matt Collins, and the list goes on to the defense, they have done a very quick roster overhaul that has been very effective.
Yeah, it's been impressive, very impressive. I mean, we go back to the offseason and we talked about they had the best free agent haul. And then all the draft grades had the New England Patriots with the best grade. And that, you're seeing that. You're seeing it happen. The New England Patriots have turned this thing around quickly. And I always say, look, most times when people talk about, oh, this NFL team, it's going to take them 10 years today. No, it really takes like one good offseason. And you can start to look very good. But I didn't expect the Patriots to be here, where they're clearly the best team in the AFC East right now. They're betting-wise, they're a clear runaway favorite almost over the Bills to win that division, partially because of their schedule. But I'm not sitting here saying the Patriots are just a product of their schedule either. I know a lot of people want to say that. And we're saying like, oh, Drake May played nobody. Like you talked about, Jory. I don't care. Drake May has been really, really good against whoever he's played. This is not college where you can schedule William and Mary for homecoming. Okay. Like this is the NFL. All these teams are tough. The Browns, for example, might not be a great team. I'm sorry, Andrew. But their defense is really good. Drake May carved them up. Like, Drake May is awesome. I do have questions about their defense. I don't think the Patriots' defense is quite there yet. I think that's keeping them back a little bit. But what a growth season in New England. All of a sudden, you're looking at, like, the next 5 years and saying, okay, the Bills have Josh Allen still, and that keeps them viable. But why the Patriots have passed them? Like, maybe this is just where we are with the AFC East going forward, that there's a new power here. The torch has been passed, and it might not be passed back for a while, considering how good Drake May is.
Yeah, you could circle December 14. So that is week 15, and that is the rematch from week 5, Sunday night week 5. If you remember, the Patriots beat the Bills, stunned a lot of people. That was, you know, kind of their official we've arrived here moment. They haven't slowed down since. Week 15, the game is in Foxborough. It is at least for now, it is a 1 o'clock Eastern time start. And the feeling is it is not going to move. That is going to be a 1 o'clock game. I don't think, matter of fact, I think that ship has already sailed. It's a 1 o'clock game. It ain't moving. And that's the big rematch where the Bills try to sweep the Patriots here. Jory, you know what stands out to me as well? Not only who they have brought in, and you listed a bunch of those players, but it's very much who they've gotten rid of. It's not like, hey, we're acquiring all these players. Mike Vrabel decided pretty quickly who his guys were not. Like he says, it's players, not plays. Well, they got rid of Keon White, and they got rid of Kyle Duggar, and they got rid of Julius Peppers, so they're off the field thing. So, like, all right, you're out. We like these guys. He got rid of pretty much all of last year's draft class. You got a rookie old lineman, third round pick from Penn State that's never active, and you got a corner late round pick who blew his knee out. It's Drake May, that's it. But he came in here and established this is how we're going to do things, and everybody has bought in, including Stephon Diggs. I mean, go back to the offseason, it feels like 100 years ago, where it's, well, is Diggs really himself? Is Diggs fully healthy? Is Diggs practicing? Has he been medically cleared? There are some people that thought, hey, look at the fine print of the contract. We're going to get him out of here. We're not going to pay him. He's never going to be here. He's not Vrabel's guy. He is his guy, and it works. And I love the moment yesterday as well. Travion Henderson, who had the great preseason and then had some mistakes in blitz pickup and holding on to the football in September, that we didn't really see him for 6 weeks. He comes back week 8, has a great game, and then back here week 10, having another great game. Late in the game, he busts out on a long touchdown where they had been told, hey, stay in bounds. He gets to the 10-yard line. He's looking back at Vrabel on the sideline. Hey, yeah. Like, am I going down? Am I scoring? And Vrabel's like, go ahead and score. Like, that was awesome. Like, every coach in America loved that.
Yeah, he had actually said that there was a time at Ohio State where he made the wrong decision on that and the coaches weren't so happy with him and he forgot how much time was on the clock. So he did not want to make that mistake again. But it's funny because he looked to the coach's sideline and as he said, he only had 2 seconds to make this decision and they were getting close. And he was like, well, I'll start going kind of across parallel to the end zone. And then the broadcast shows Drake May going like this and saying like, hey, get down. So I thought it was funny that actually Drake May wanted something different from what the coaches wanted on that moment. But that was great situational awareness, given how situational awareness paired with athleticism to be like, I'm going to try and see what they want and also keep running away from the defenders, even if not into the end zone, as I assess that.
Yeah,
you know,
all right.
So it's funny, Andrew. Real quick, Andrew. Yeah, if I can, real quick. You talked about that Bills Patriots rematch that's coming up. The funny thing is that game might not even matter by the time we get to it. When you look at the Patriots schedule coming up, the Patriots might be clear of the Bills by a couple games by the time that game happens. That's how good the Patriots have been this season. Hats off to Mike Vrabel. I don't love the way the Patriots got to that point, right? I think that they did some kind of sleazy stuff in the offseason to get to the Mike Vrabel point, but made a home run hire. Mike Vrabel's one of the best coaches in the NFL. The Tennessee Titans fired that guy. What were they thinking? What were they doing? Oh,
don't know what they were thinking. Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking. But let's get to the Bills, because, and this goes back to my Bengals conversation about how it's a 1 week. It's a 1 week season, and they're 18 1 week seasons, one of which you get a week off and sit on the couch and contemplate what could have been this week. But let's look at the Bills. A week ago, the Bills were riding high after bottling up Patrick Mahomes and all their pieces on defense. It is a challenge, seemingly week in, week out, for Sean McDermott, like who he's going to have available on defense. But all these pieces did their job, and Josh Allen is Josh Allen, and they beat Kansas City. They beat Kansas City, and the week before that, this upstart Carolina team, they didn't just beat them, they pummeled them. 40-9. This was coming out of the bye. McDermott's great coming out of the bye. Everything is back. And then they go to Miami, and it's awful. I mean, they turn the ball over. James Cook fumbles, and Josh Allen fumbles, and Keon Coleman can't get separation. And now we're questioning Keon Coleman's effort. It seemed like half of Sean McDermott's press conference today was talking about effort. Sean McDermott is asked point blank, is Joe Brady still your play caller? He's asked point blank, hey, Brian Daboll's been fired. Are you going to bring him in? Brian Daboll's been fired 4 hours, and Sean McDermott's already being asked, are you going to hire him to fix your offense? It's a week-in, week-out league. They are now 6-3, and Frank, they are at home this week against Tampa. Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, that's a fun game. Like, no matter how you slice it, oh, yeah, that's a fun game. But talk about week by week, Baker is now questioning intensity and effort from his team after they lose to the Patriots. This is one of the spiciest games of the year. But just consider where Sean McDermott, Frank, is today as opposed to where he was a week ago.
Kind of unbelievable. You're right. And now you look at the Bills season kind of with a fresh set of eyes after that horrible outing in Miami. Like, they were really outplayed by a bad Dolphins team, like completely. And now you're looking back at September saying, okay, yeah, they were 4-0, but you needed a miracle to beat the Ravens. Barely beat the Saints, barely beat the Dolphins. They're 2-3 since September. This might just not be a very good football team. And, you know, we got the whole lecture from Brandon Bean, their general manager at the trading deadline. Like, guys, this isn't fantasy football. You can't just trade your pick. Maybe they should have traded some picks, because that is a really flawed team right now. They have issues on defense because of injuries.
They tried. Let me get the Jalen Waddle story. Yeah. So our friend Tom Pelissero reported Sunday morning that they offered a 1 and a 3 to the Dolphins for Jalen Waddle, but the 1 was in 2027, which many people are saying is the better draft in 2026, at least in terms of the quarterbacks and maybe the wide receivers. They wanted, Tom says, a 1 in 2026, not 7. I don't get it. I would have done the deal, but sorry, Frank, I cut you off. They made an effort for Jalen Waddle.
They did. They did. But I think that once you strike out there, and especially with the divisional foe, you should have been banking on that anyway. Go make something happen. And they didn't make anything happen. And then again, the lecture afterwards about this isn't fantasy football. Okay, that's fine. Now you just got a flawed team that just got boat raced by the Dolphins. So, and I think the Patriots have passed them by. It ain't coming back. Patriots going to win that division. You look at the schedule, it's just like, okay, it's done. Like, the Bills are in a championship window, and those things can close really quickly. And that loss to the Dolphins was just so disheartening in many ways. Like, you talk about effort or just execution. They were never in that game. Like, it wasn't just like this fluky, like, oh, the Dolphins had this Hail Mary at the end or something. No, Dolphins outplayed them. The 2-7 Dolphins just outplayed you. That should cause you to take a look in the mirror. And I don't really think the Bills are going to like what they see in that mirror. They're a very flawed team at this point. Again, just 2-3 since September. Who are you? You're probably just an average at best team.
Yeah, but I think you're an average at best team. If you want to say that, that is going to make the playoffs. I mean, by ESPN's metrics, they have an 87.2% chance of making the playoffs. And going back to what y'all were saying about the Patriots-Bills game, I'm not saying it's going to decide the division. And it is possible that the Patriots are so far away from the Bills at that point that they just really do not seem like they're going to lose their grasp. But I think the game will still matter to both teams for seeding, because I expect both teams to make the playoffs. And I expect who else they play to be dependent on it. I mean, for all we know, they could be playing each other again in the playoffs in the first round. I don't think that would be surprising. I think when you look at the Bills, to me, when the Jaguars got Jakobi Meyers, I was kind of like, oh, well, the Steelers could have used a receiver. I mean, the Bills. Uh-huh. And so to me, it's not like about Jalen Waddle, because most teams don't want to trade within the division. And I mean, the Cowboys got roasted for trading to the Packers in the NFC. And Adam Schefter was reporting this weekend that they put a clause in the contract that the Packers specifically cannot trade Micah Parsons to the Philadelphia Eagles in the next couple of years without repercussions. And so I think that there's kind of this idea of like, yeah, you're probably not going to give it to the division team, even if you are not winning the division. But I think that the Bills have a strong enough team that they're going to make the playoffs. The question is, like, a week ago, they beat the Chiefs and we're like, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year that when the Chiefs come marching down the door in the playoffs, the Bills are going to have an answer. And I'm not sure we should feel as confident anymore.
So I wasn't going to bring it up. Actually, I've forgotten about it until you mentioned it, Jory. The Schefter story about the Micah Parsons trade. So what he reported is that because, you know, Micah's from Pennsylvania and Jerry doesn't want to see him go play for the Eagles, they put a clause in the contract that in the next couple of years, if the Packers were to trade Micah to the Eagles, that they would owe the Cowboys a first round pick. And for balance sake, they did the same thing with Kenny Clark, that if Kenny Clark were to be traded back to the NFC North, the Cowboys would owe the Packers a first-round pick. Look, neither trade is going to happen. If I'm Micah, my first reaction is I'm filing a grievance. I don't know if he has. Do you think he would have standing here? Because let's say he has a no-trade clause. Why should my employer be allowed to negotiate whether or not I have a no trade clause for 31 teams or 32 teams? Am I crazy?
That's fair. If you think about it, I mean, theoretically anyway, if you could say, well, you can't trade him to these four teams, what's to stop the next team from being like, you can't trade him to these 30 teams? You did it with four. Why can't you do it? Like, you know, like I kind of get where you're going with this, Andrew. I hadn't thought about it that way.
I haven't followed up with anyone.
Yeah, I think it's a bad precedent. It's a bad precedent. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. It was on my list of things today to reach out to some personnel people going, is this kosher? Because my first reaction was, wait a minute, that can't be. That's not fair. It's not fair to Micah Parsons. Anyway. I have no idea.
It's a good question that we should look into, but I do think it's worth noting that the Cowboys held Micah's rights and he was still under contract with them. So had they not been willing to trade him to the Packers when he requested a trade, I mean, he was their employee who said, I don't want to work for you anymore and fulfill the rest of the contract. Now, I'm not saying he shouldn't have done that. It worked out fine for both sides.
No, it's part of the story. You're right.
You could say. But I think that if they had his rights when they made that request, they're not saying this after the fact. They're saying, if you want to go be traded as you requested, we are going to put in these stipulations. And I think that seems pretty normal, even if it's not this specific stipulation. But it's a good question.
Yeah, I would argue, let's say I'm player X, I'm on whatever team, and you're going to trade me somewhere. You can't restrict my future movement once I'm out of your building. What right do you have to restrict my future movement?
Yeah, no.
I'm no longer yours. I'm
gone. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, but I would just look at it that way. Either way, so there's the Bills. Obviously, they're, I don't want to say they're in turmoil, but their game against the Buccaneers this week is must-see TV now. We got the Patriots. Let's hit the Lions real quick here. Lions had a top-five offense, all right? A top-five offense. They're playing the Commanders yesterday, a team in disarray. Disarray. I've heard it both ways. And like today, Dan Quinn, after his lifeless defense looked exactly that lifeless, has taken away defensive play calling duties from Joe Witt. Longtime assistant there was with him in Dallas, came with him to Washington. But the story of the day, at least from a Lions perspective, was that during the first half, Dan Campbell's got the big play sheet. Dan Campbell is clearly talking into his headset a little bit more than he normally is. And it looks like Dan Campbell's calling plays. Well, the Lions are cooking. Like Jameson Williams is getting to the end zone, and Jahmyr Gibbs looks like a Hall of Famer, and they're cooking. But wait a minute, is he calling plays? because John Morton's the OC. And then at halftime, Megan Oliva on the Fox crew asked him, and he didn't say no. And then afterwards, he said yes. I don't, and maybe maybe I'm nuts. Maybe this happens all the time. Like Dayball and Kafka, there's always a sly game who is calling plays there. But generally speaking, Frank, if a coach takes away play calling duties from a coordinator, it is a pretty public thing. It happened in Cleveland this week, the other way around, where Kevin Stefanski said, Tommy Rees, you take it for the second consecutive year. He gave it up to the man who had the OC title. Dan Campbell taking it from a top five offense? That was odd, isn't it?
A little odd, but I think that he looked at some things that he was troubled by. Maybe Jahmyr Gibbs not getting involved enough the week before, Jameson Williams not getting involved enough the whole season, and just said, you know what? This is my team. If we end up sinking below a top five offense, I don't want to sit on the sidelines and just watch it happen under somebody else's watch. I think Campbell had the right tone after the game. He said, look, guys, this is all collaborative anyway. I'm talking to John the whole time. I'm talking to my other coaches the whole time. It's not like I'm just calling plays on my own, but to just take ownership of it and say, we need a different rhythm on offense. We needed just some new looks on offense. It worked. I mean, yeah, I guess the Commanders, I get that. But hey, it's his team. And I think that, you know, if you want to sink or swim, you want to do it holding onto the big, Denny's menu in front of you calling the plays. And he did a great job. And there's no reason to change now, right?
Right. It's funny because I don't think from a results standpoint, we should be making any grand assumptions yet. I get that they beat the Commanders 44-22. I also think the Cowboys had a similar result against the Commanders just a couple weeks ago. And yes, their offense looks pretty good, but it didn't look good against the Broncos and the Cardinals and some of these other teams. So I don't think that the Washington Commanders defense right now is an accurate litmus test of the average NFL unit. And I also think it's interesting that Dan Campbell made this decision after they'd won six games, or I guess they'd won five before that. And so you kind of look at it and you say, Dan Campbell's not doing this because they're losing. This makes me think it's less of a wins losses and more of a what's going on in terms of the way that the personalities are working with in the building. But if you told me, hey, this head coach, do you trust him to take over? There are a few people I trust more with personnel decisions and hiring and coaching decisions right now than Dan Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. People forget Dan Campbell was a tight end. He was an offensive player. You know, a lot of people think Dan Campbell, big meathead, like bites kneecaps. And Dan Campbell was a good
guy.
Tight end.
Not a
great tight end.
Guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's a sharp, sharp, sharp dude. He's calling plays. All right, there is our Week 10 Monday recap show. Coming up tomorrow, the battle for supremacy atop the NFC on a cold evening at Lambeau. The Packers and Eagles. We'll tell you what happened. Tell you what we think, more importantly, of what happened. And Ladd McConkey will join us. The Chargers wide receiver. After Keenan Allen on Sunday broke the Chargers' all-time franchise receptions record with like a little pop pass. Should that have counted? I mean, isn't it like falling on a fumble in the end zone and then like breaking the all-time rushing touchdown record? I digress. Well, we'll ask that to Ladd McConkey coming up tomorrow. For Jory, for Frank, I'm Andrew. Thanks for listening to and thanks for watching Inside Coverage.
Wow.